Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and a San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And this is episode 102, everyone. Welcome to February 2018.
Well, the end of it, anyway.
Exactly. It has been a very, very busy month, and we did take last week off from recording our episode because one of the members of the local LGBTQ community passed away unexpectedly last week, and it was announced that morning. So instead of recording our episode, Pearl and I attended a memorial for Patrice.
I don't know how to say her last
name. Samick, I think.
Samick, yeah. She's Auntie Patrice in the community. She was a fabulous French transgender woman out here who was really big in, like, the fundraising community. And she was also a seamstress for a lot of the queens around there.
Yes, she was Miss Gay San Francisco 2006. And she had been ill for some time. Still, I think that her passing was unexpected in many ways because, I don't know, you just don't think of people,
leaving.
I don't think... I had heard over the weekend prior that she likely may not make it through the weekend. This is the strange thing. So Patrice and I had known each other for many years, but we were never terribly close. I mean, we did not really travel in the same circles or whatever.
I was actually pretty close to Patrice. Patrice gave me advice a couple of times about hormones and stuff when I was having issues with certain issues you have when taking testosterone blockers and hormones and stuff. She gave me a lot of advice that's actually helped me out a lot. But she was just that kind of person. She was always helping whoever, like, she could touch.
Yes, you know? I definitely think that one of the things that I found so remarkable about her was that she was always very vibrant and very vivacious and very, her personality was just very effervescent. She was very bubbly and very outgoing. And I do believe that that's another reason that her passing shocked so many people, because even when she was very, very ill, she did not present as ill at all. And she never let on publicly how ill perhaps she was. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I found, it was like startling to me, is that the night before, or the morning actually that she passed away, I had a dream about her. My dogs woke me up at just before 4 o'clock in the morning. And when they woke me up, I had been dreaming about Patrice. And when they announced what time she passed at 5 minutes until 4 in the morning. And it was so strange because I could not put my finger on why it was that I would have been dreaming about her per se.
Yeah, because you guys weren't really close.
Because we weren't really close. But, and then to be actually dreaming about her at almost approximately the time that she passed away was very, I don't know, a little jarring to me. But the one thing I will say is, as many of the listeners know, especially if you are from the Bay Area or follow my social media, I am now in the final stages of my campaign and run to be the next Empress of San Francisco. And Patrice was a very dedicated member of the Imperial Council of San Francisco. She, as I said,
She was dedicated to fundraising just in general.
Yes.
Though, not just any of the court systems.
So she had, but she was very particularly interested in the role of Empress. She had herself wanted to run to be empress. She had applied. She had made all the plans to run a number of years ago, but because her citizenship was not complete at the time,
of course,
she was unable to do so. Now, the Imperial Council of San Francisco, to put it in perspective, is a registered 501c3, and the role of emperor and empress are official parts of that, and everything sort of, when you run a nonprofit, all of your I's must be dotted and all your T's must be crossed, or you can lose your nonprofit status. So she was unable to run, and she had been in hospice care for the last, off and on for the last few months of her life, but she had specifically requested, and I was quite shocked, to walk into review board the day that I went in to be reviewed as a candidate for Empress, to find Patrice on the board that day. She was so interested, she was so excited that I was going to, that I had applied, that she'd specifically requested to come out that day and sit in on the board. And afterwards, that was one of the last conversations I really had with her. Afterwards, she was so incredibly excited about my interest in participation. And so anyway, the long and short of it is that we lost a member of our community here. And because of the fact that it did fall on the day that we would normally record, Pearl asked specifically if we could take that day off so we could attend a memorial for her. It was a beautiful showing up of people at the lookout. It was packed with people.
I thought they were going to have like speeches and stuff, but they didn't do that.
I think that people probably will do that at her official memorial. I mean, that was the day of her passing, so there was nothing formal in place. It was very moving. Now, Empress 41 of San Francisco, Galileo, and she were best friends.
Best friends.
Best friends for many, many years.
They had another best friend, Auntie Mel, which had passed a while ago.
Yes.
Which is another wonderful trans woman who was really big in the community out here.
She was hilarious, a Hawaiian woman. She was just hilarious.
Yeah.
I actually competed against Mel in the Miss Gay San Francisco pageant in 2006.
I had actually never got a chance to meet Mel. Well, but I've heard so many great things about her.
This is one of the things that I specifically loved about both Mel and Patrice. And the thing that struck me about both women is that they were extremely genuine. They were extremely authentic people. Mm-hmm. And there was none of that. I mean, Patrice would sort of like read you right to your face in this very funny French way. Oh, like, oh, darling, I know you're not going to go on stage looking like that.
Yeah.
Let me get you, you know, you have to hear it with a French accent. It was just a lot. But my first meeting of Melanie was at the Miss Gay San Francisco pageant, or the week leading up to it, basically. And my strongest memory of her was we were backstage at the Miss Gay San Francisco pageant, and it was held at the Hotel Whitcomb. For listeners, the Hotel Whitcomb is right on Market Street. It's like right at the corner of 8th and Market Street. It's a very busy area of town. And we were in this room that looked out, had windows looking out onto Market Street. And there weren't enough mirrors. So Melanie was standing topless, looking at her reflection in the mirror, like in the window.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking over being like, she's completely topless, facing out on Market Street. And she don't give a fuck.
Shit.
Not a fuck to be given, nowhere, and in her whole mind. So anyway, that was my first impression of her, and to this day, like, remains. Whenever I think, when somebody mentions her, that's what first thing I think about. I'm like, ooh. But yeah. I love that. I love when somebody just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, but we're definitely all going to miss Patrice. And I think they've announced a few things about her memorial online. I think it's coming up quickly.
I do know that it will be held in Oakland at City of Refuge Church. Mm-hmm. She was a proud member of the chorus, mm-hmm. at City of Refuge. And she will, so they will, you know, memorialize her there. The date is in March. I don't know the specific date of it. Anyway, more information on that for locals will be revealed. And, you know, my heart certainly goes out. Like I said, I did not know Patrice extremely well, but I know that there were so many people around me. I know that Kipper was very close with her. Our girlfriend, Kipper Snacks, very, very close with Patrice, as were many, many people that we know.
I actually have a gown that she let me borrow for a step down that actually happened to be too small. So I don't know. I think I might know what to do with it. I have an idea, but we're going to miss her.
So, yeah, she was always telling me that she wanted to make me something, and I never, just never had the chance for that. She made beautiful clothing. Beautiful, honey. Beautiful.
I have a few things by her, but that weren't...
Custom-made for you? Like, stuff that was sort of like... We call those tran-me-downs, like, from drag queen to drag queen. So
drag-me-downs.
Anyway, so that's going on. I will say that this past weekend was voting day for Imperial Council of San Francisco.
When do they announce the winner?
It's this Saturday. The winner is announced this Saturday, February 24th at Coronation 53, Imperial Coronation 53, at the Design Center in San Francisco. It is a gala event.
And the San Francisco Design Center, for anyone who hasn't been there, is a beautiful space.
It is lovely. Pearl and I competed in the Design Meets Divas of Drag there.
Yeah.
And it's just a lovely, lovely space. And so it's a gala event. People come from literally all over the country and sometimes all over the world to attend San Francisco Imperial Coronation. Emperor Nick Hunter and Empress Mercedes Monroe will be stepping down that night. And
I actually ran into Mercedes yesterday at a show. She asked if I was going. I was like, no, girl. I will not be there. I got two gigs.
Was she at her Monroe's at Midnight event?
It wasn't her event. It was actually her drag daughter Ruby's event, but she was just there for support.
Pumps Over Pomeroy?
No, it was their Monroe's Monday night, but the way it works is the three queens rotate who the host is.
Right, but I mean, it's still Monroe's, it's called Monroe's at Midnight, at the Midnight Sun.
Yeah.
But is it really at midnight, or is it...
No.
Is it 9 o'clock?
It's early. You get there at 9, the show starts at like 10, 10:15.
How about I legit have like thought that it was at midnight, and they've asked me to go like 3 weeks in a row, and I was like...
It's called midnight because it's at the midnight sun.
Right. Well, I thought it was at midnight.
Oh, God.
And I was like, I am not going to be out at no kind of midnight on a Monday, bitch. Sorry about it. Well, so point of clarification, if you're in San Francisco, Monroe's at midnight is not actually at midnight, bitches.
It's at the midnight sun, but not... The time being midnight.
I legit thought it was at midnight o'clock, and therefore I was like, I'm going to be like sound asleep.
They just had Morgan McMichaels last week.
Yeah, I feel bad now because...
This week they're having Bibi Zahara Benet.
Yes. This week upcoming or...
This week upcoming, yeah.
So, Bibi Zahara Benet will be there from RuPaul's All-Star Drag Race Season 3. Which we will talk about later in this episode. But I do want to touch on the fact that voting day for the Imperials, I was out there, of course, because of my campaign to be Empress. Rey McKenzie and Leandro Gonzalez were also out there in their efforts to become the next Emperor of San Francisco. It was an exhausting day, girl. It's exhausting. I was up and getting in drag by like 7:30 in the morning.
Absolutely never.
And it was, it felt long, it was exhausting, but it was very rewarding, and I feel very flooded with support from our community, so thank you to all the people. I want to give a special shout out, one of my Twitter supporters, social media supporters, who I've only met two times. Her real name is Linda, but I know her as Pinky Francisco, Pinky Francisco on Twitter. And Linda showed up and brought her son out to the Castro to vote for me. And it was so sweet. She came hunting me down and brought me a beautiful pink flower to wear. And I just thought it was so sweet. And her Facebook posts and her social media posts about it were so kind. So thank you, Pinky, for coming out to support me. I appreciate that. And we will see on Saturday night at the Design Center who... The next emperor and empress of San Francisco will be in terms of whether that will be Ray or Leandro is the emperor and whether or not I was elected. Fingers crossed.
Girl. Yeah. Fingers crossed, girl.
Well, I know
I can go either way, girl.
It's a yes or no vote, you guys, but I'm not worried about it, but at the same time, I will not be surprised if there's a lot of no votes, because I have never held my tongue in telling a bitch how busted they are, or how fucked up they are, or how, like, scandalous, whatever the case is. So I'm sure there's a lot of people, I can think of a couple of fat toads right now off the top of my head.
I would really love to be there for this, but...
So, it all becomes very public, because they actually announced the number of no votes you got.
Really?
Yes, at Victory Brunch on Sunday.
Oh,
the Emperor and the new Emperor and Empress host a Victory Brunch on Sunday morning. Saturday is coronation, which is this super long event. And then the new Emperor and Empress have to be back up and out at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. They take a trip first to the new plaque of Jose Saria on the Rainbow Walk in the Castro, where they honor Jose Saria, who is the founder of the imperial court system of the Americas.
Yeah, some people are having some gripe about that, girl. I saw it online today, girl.
They're having a gripe about it. What?
Because, I don't know, some people just don't want to get up early to go. And Patty McGroin went off on Facebook talking about you queens just need to eat it. We're supposed to do this annually. And...
Well, everybody gets up. They make a trip to... Now, the Jose Saria plaque is brand new. So that's been added to a previous trip. So they do the Jose Saria plaque in the Castro first. From what I'm told, the new emperor and empress have to get down on their hands and knees and clean the plaque or whatever. And then we go to...
Wow.
Then we make a memorial trip to this...
Don't they have the people that work at the site for that?
Well, apparently, it's paying homage to the person who started the whole system. So then we make a trip to the cemetery, where not Jose's cemetery plot... But where Emperor Norton, the original emperor of San Francisco, because there's this historic figure who claimed to be the emperor of San Francisco. His name was Norton. And so he is considered the first emperor of San Francisco. They make this memorial trip to his cemetery plot. Then from there, they go to Victory Brunch. And at Victory Brunch is where the new emperor and empress announce the name of their court, their new names as emperor and empress, what they've chosen as their titles. Everybody has brunch, but they also announce the vote count. And so if you get some no votes, girl, because when I ran for Grand Duchess a number of years ago, trust me, I didn't go unscathed there either. But I was excited. My mother, Landa, was like, I just remember you being hella excited because of the fact that Patrick got more no votes than you did.
Damn.
Patrick Noonan, my Grand Duke, I love you, honey. Thank you so much for all your support and help. So, yeah. Anyway, I am certain. I told them, I was like, I would love it if there was actually 50% yes and 50% no, and then the one vote yes, because you have to win by 50% plus one. Because in my mind, if you're pissing people off, you are doing something right sometimes. Because some people just, as in the immortal words of RuPaul, you should always try to be diplomatic, but sometimes you just have to break it down for a motherfucker.
I guess, girl. Good luck with that.
So how did you spend your weekend, Pearl? Because she sure as fuck didn't show up at anything relating to voting.
I sure the fuck didn't, girl. I was booked. I was getting paid. I had, So on Saturday, I am so dragged out. I have another weekend full. But you know what? So Saturday I had a show at DNA Lounge for Booty Night. It was the Beyonce mashup night. I just really, really enjoy that crowd.
So did you do a brunch show that day too?
No, I didn't.
See, y'all, she wasn't doing shit in the morning or afternoon, but she couldn't go and vote.
I was living my life, girl. And then Sunday...
But you know what, listeners? That's fine. Because at some point, she'll be like, people don't support me. And I'll just be like, play this back to her. Because it's shady as fuck that she wouldn't go out and vote. When other people got busy lives, too. But go on, Pearl.
Mm-hmm. And then Sunday was my day with my brother. I got to spend the entire day with my brother. We haven't gotten to spend some time together. So we hung out in the hate. My little brother is actually getting a tattoo for both me and our other sibling. And he got the tattoo that represented me today, or that day, which is really cool.
A gargoyle.
He got a queen chess piece with my initial in it.
A bat hanging upside down by its feet.
Hater. Hater. And then on Monday, because it was a 3-day weekend, y'all, I had
the show. A possum hanging by its tail from a branch.
The Midnight Sun, girl. I had the show at the Midnight Sun for Monroe's at Midnight with Sayoni and Carney.
Was that the one that
Ruby hosted?
But that was not the one with Morgan in it. That was the week before.
That was the week before.
Okay, got it.
But apparently that show has taken off. Last week when Morgan was there, I heard that place was so packed, performers could not even get off the stage.
Well, good.
Yeah, so they're doing it. I'm sure that show's going to last a minute. This upcoming weekend is going to be another full weekend of drag, and then I get a break. So Saturday, I will be at The Lookout for Brunch, and then I'll be at Asia SF that evening. And then Sunday, I'll be at the cafe with Sonique from RuPaul's Drag Race Season 1. They're actually going to try to make that an all-trans show that night. So that'll be a lot of fun. It'll be me, Sonique, and Kipper. I'm assuming maybe Bianca. And I think they're trying to figure out the last girl.
Cool.
What about you?
I am in drag for the next week in a row. Like, today is my only day that I'm not in drag this week. Tomorrow, of course, this is the week leading up to Coronation and following Coronation. It's a very busy week. There's lots of events relating to Coronation. Plus, I'm hosting the RuPaul's All-Stars Drag Race show at The Lookout. So, Wednesday, I have the in-town show for the Imperial Council. Thursday is an event in the evening for the Imperial Council also. It's a memorial for various monarchs, past emperor and empresses. I don't know all the details about that, but then I most certainly am going to be at The Lookout hosting RuPaul's All-Stars Drag Race. And that show is, like, watching that with that crowd is a blast. Those people are hilarious. The audiences are hilarious. Then Friday is the out-of-town show, meaning that all of the people who are coming to town for Coronation will be in town by then, and they have a show specifically for all those people because they always want to perform and be seen. Girl, this is a CNB scene thing, and I'm like, which I'm not super big on, and I don't kind of give a shit, but I definitely want to be there and be respectful to all the people who are visiting. One of my big goals during the course of doing this is to really network and meet people from all over the country who are part of this system. Like I said, sometimes, even though I'm doing this emperor thing, that the idea of being part of the system as a whole isn't super exciting to me because the system itself brings a lot of politics with it. Anytime
you spend more money and you don't make any.
Anytime you have all of those kind of drag personalities in the structure of a nonprofit organization, there's a lot of politics that go into it. And I really want to sidestep most of that politics. I want to have fun and I want to raise money for the community. I do not really want to invest myself emotionally in the politics of the organization, but I want the opportunity to make acquaintances, friendships, connections, networking across the country. And I really think this is going to be a great opportunity to do that. And it will start on Friday at the out-of-town show, which I believe they're holding at the cafe, is from what I recall. I know that Wednesday's in-town show is at Bow, but the out-of-town show is going to be at the cafe, I think. Like I said, all these people are going to be from all over the place. Then Saturday is Coronation. That is a marathon event. Then Sunday, I just outlined, it starts at dawn and goes till I don't even know when. And then I want to say on Monday somewhere, there's going to be a fundraising event, which is actually not a fundraising event in the sense of being, it's more of a benefit because it raises money. It's held by the court systems, by court systems from Alaska and Hawaii and Texas, I want to say, to help the newly crowned emperor and empress come and visit those particular courts. And I definitely want to travel. I certainly want the opportunity to go to Alaska. And I was pulled aside over the weekend and it was whispered into my ear, if I'm crowned, to please make sure I go to the Hawaii coronation. And I was like, you don't have to twist my arm to make me go to Hawaii, bitch.
Well, you do have to pay for your own flights and stuff for that, for all of these things with the court system, correct?
Yes, you do. But there are fundraising events to help with those things. And there are people who will be benefactors who will help with it. Mm-hmm. And especially one of the things that I've already been had numerous people pull me aside. They're very excited. There are people who are extremely excited that I'm doing this. And it
Lovely.
Was, and it's pretty, like, it was a little bit shocking to me in many ways. But there's people who are very excited. So they're saying to me, like, hey, if you need help with travel, I've got, you know, flight miles, or mm-hmm. I have air discount, whatever. There's a lot of stuff. So it's going to be, and we also get some travel coverage reimbursement. So my goal 100% is to travel, do San Francisco proud, representing us if elected, and make a lot of new friends. That's really what I want to do. Make a lot of new acquaintances, not new friendships. And I plan to visit places. One of the things that's really exciting to me about this is I want to visit places that I don't think people from San Francisco, like the Emperor and Empress of San Francisco, normally visit. Because there are places that the Emperor and Empress always visit, because they're like the high profile places and stuff like that. I want to visit the places that people don't necessarily go to, so I can meet people who I would never have a chance to meet. Those are all cool things.
Keep in mind, like I said, this is stuff that, you know, is very expensive. Like, these are, but considering it comes out of your pocket, these are things you can do even if you don't win.
Right.
You know what I mean? So for anyone else who has ran in the past, who is thinking about running in the future, and if you haven't won or if you don't win, don't think that you need this to do good for the community if that's what your goal is.
Well, I've never relied on having any kind of a title to do good for the community. I feel like I give back to the community quite often, and I feel that this is something that I wanted to do because of the fact that from a fundraising perspective, it allows the person who is leading the organization, whether that, you know, as the Emperor and Empress, to direct the fundraising efforts of the organization for the next year. That's how I looked at when I was reigned as Grand Duchess. I got to choose the charities. The same thing with this, like my fundraising event a couple of weeks ago during my campaign, which was geared towards my charity of choice, raised over raised exactly $837 and some change for the Castro Country Club, which is a local organization that supports the LGBTQ clean and sober community. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that is something that's very close to me, and it's an organization that, because of rising costs in the Castro, is frequently in sort of like fundraising. It's always consistently mm-hmm. in fundraising mode because it's a nonprofit and it's, you know, it's constantly in need of staying afloat.
And especially in the city.
And so, especially mm-hmm. in that neighborhood in the city, if you consider consider the fact that retail outlets in the Castro district are about 25, maybe 30% more expensive for the stuff they sell than anywhere else. I mean, a Starbucks coffee is an extra 75 cents in the Castro. A pack of cigarettes or whatever is like $2 more. Mm-hmm. The 7-Eleven in the Castro is more expensive. I mean, there is that Exxon Extra Mile or whatever that's uh-huh. right below the cafe. The drink that I normally would buy for like $1.99 is $2.79 there. And I'm like, what the actual fuck is going on here?
Right.
So the point being that in this city specifically, everything is expensive. And then when you get in a nicer neighborhood like the Castro, it's extra, extra expensive. So for me, though, working hard for the community to make sure something like the Castro Country Club gets extra attention, like by being Empress, I'll get to have numerous events for that location. And then, mm-hmm. of course, the more traditional organizations that we usually support. So that's the reason I like to do this. Like I said, I've never needed a crown to do something good for the community. You know, I mm-hmm. do my sock drive thing because I love the community.
Right,
and
exactly.
It's whatever. And I've never needed anybody
huge.
To do it. Pearl is right, you guys. If you don't need something like this, girl, to do something good for the community. Find something that you want. If there's something, I was having a great conversation with a guy named Alan from the Bare Chest Calendar just yesterday. And he said that when you see something that needs to be done,
Do it.
And I agree with that. That is my philosophy. All right, you guys, why don't we take a quick break? And then when we come back, let's dive into our thoughts on RuPaul's All-Stars Drag Race.
We got two episodes to catch you guys up on. So if you haven't seen them, this is your cue to hit it.
Do we have... We have two episodes?
Well, what we missed last week.
Well, last week I knew about, but the week before, didn't we recap that one? I don't know. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment with more. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We'll be back in a moment.
Hallelujah, this is Shangela, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, honey. Hallelujah.
Clock the bag.
Clock the bag.
Clock the shoe.
Clock the shoe.
Now punch the clock. It's time to work.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
If you have not watched one or the last 2 weeks of RuPaul's All Stars Drag Race Season 3.
Hit it.
Now is the time. This is your spoiler alert, boo. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. We are going to recap the last 2 weeks. We did not recap. We were out for a week, so we missed two episodes. We missed one, and now we're going to recap the most recent one. So we will go back in time. This is us going back 2 weeks.
To the Bitchler Challenge.
Yes, the Bitchler, when the girls were challenged with being given different archetypes of characters who are seen on dating shows, such as The Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
Each of the girls was assigned a various form of character, which they were expected to play during a challenge, which, I don't know, what was the name of that actor who was on that challenge?
I don't know, he was fine.
He was fine, honey.
Fine.
He was so gorgeous.
Oh, Jesus.
He is from the TV show Unreal, which I am familiar with Unreal, because Unreal focuses on, and it's ironic in many ways that RuPaul's Drag Race would have him on there, because Unreal focuses on the backstage antics at a reality television show.
Okay.
So Unreal shows all of these things that actually happen on reality shows, because one of my friends, I don't remember which of them, one of my friends who'd been on reality TV was like, girl, watching the show Unreal is like surreal, because it shows all these things where like producers are whispering bullshit to contestants and like making them have mental breakdowns, where they are, you know, picking fights between people, where they're pitting the contestants against each other. And so it shows all of that element of what it's like to be on a reality TV show. So RuPaul's Drag Race has this gorgeous man on there as their bitchler, where he gets to pick from 8 girls to choose his future bride or whatever. As it turns out, many of the girls were really quite funny. Like, I thought a number of them were pretty good.
And then some were funny, but for the wrong reasons.
So, some standouts. Shangela did quite well.
Amazing.
Shangela and Chi-Chi Devane, paired up as a couple. Their characters are that they are a polyamorous couple.
And Chi-Chi is supposed to be more into the Bitchler, and Shangela is supposed to be more into Chi-Chi.
Right. So, basically, Shangela is more, like, lesbian-oriented, whereas apparently, like, Chi-Chi's character is supposed to be more like
straight.
A swinger or whatever. That was, Chi-Chi was a dud,
was
girl.
For right, girl.
It was terrible. She was terrible. Meanwhile, Shangela is this very calculated lesbian who's trying to collect his sperm so that they can have a family together.
Right.
And Shangela was pretty fucking hilarious.
She was great. Then they had
Ben de la Creme was playing a cougar. God.
She was my favorite.
Ben de la Creme, the funny thing to me was, when I was hosting this at Lookout, the viewing party, I said, isn't it funny that Ben de la Creme is up there as Pandora Box? Because,
oh my God, you were so rude.
But her like the way she had done her makeup and everything reminded me a lot of Pandora Box. Like the way
I could see that.
But she was hilarious. She was like this very boozy, like, a little bit
cougar.
She was a little
her
bit.
Her character was the cougar.
Yeah, she was a little bit Kris Jenner to me too, like kind of like a boozy Kris Jenner.
She kind of gave me like an older Anna Nicole.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think she was as glamorous as Anna Nicole. Rest in peace, Anna Nicole. I think that every time I see Bendela Krim, Bendela is not that old, but something about her drag persona reads old.
Older. Yeah,
her drag reads very old. Anyway, she was hilarious. She was hysterical. Now, they gave Trixie Mattel high scores for her character. I personally thought Trixie's character was kind of a one note. I did not find her character.
My thing about Trixie
she was sort of the snobby, kind of self-centered, like.
She was supposed to be the fake girl.
Yeah, the fake girl. So, like, they compared her performance to Paris Hilton. Her performance did nothing for me.
I think the issue with that is because they paired her with Milk, who screamed over every line that she tried to deliver.
Milk's character was, like, the stalker
type
of character. Leading up to this, of course, Milk had had issues, like...
She thought she had this one, girl.
She sure did. She had issues already with Kennedy Davenport. A couple episodes before that, or the episode before that, she was crying because she was safe, and she was like, my Celine Dion was amazing!
It was dreadful.
So, I don't know. So, she was playing a stalker character. I thought she was pretty dreadful as well.
She was awful.
I mean, she was awful.
Bibi Zahara-Benet
played a virgin.
Right.
She decided that she was going to be
an African virgin princess.
I did not love her performance.
No.
Either. She was paired with
Aja. Who played...
the needy girl.
She played the needy girl, but instead cried the entire episode.
She did not come across... She didn't quite understand needy, apparently.
She didn't.
And that was a mess. And then, let's see. Oh, and then it was Kennedy Davenport playing the party girl.
Oh my God, that was so good.
Who was she paired with, though?
Oh, who was she
paired with? Or was she paired with Aja?
No.
I think she was paired with Aja as the needy girl.
Oh, and Ben must have been paired with... I don't remember.
Anyway, Aja played the needy girl, and she was bad, but Kennedy, as the party girl...
Fucking hilarious. She was the one paired with Aja.
Hilarious. Mm-hmm. Was absolutely hilarious. I mean, I think it was very interesting because I'm not certain that she played the party girl, but to me, she played more of... The one thing that made me slightly uncomfortable about her performance is I felt like she played... I felt she played like a really like lowbrow racial stereotype character, kind of like those girls who like the really really hood ghetto type of girl who's on like Bad Girls Club or like that kind of stuff. I mean, I suppose it was hilarious. She played her idea of the party girl.
Yeah,
I think that she did it extremely well. She was effing hilarious, period. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it. I mean, she was a hoot. So, ultimately...
And she won the challenge.
She did win that challenge. And then on the runway, what was their runway challenge for that episode?
Was it
hair upon hair upon hair?
Yeah.
It was wigs on wigs on wigs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they come down the runway. To me, one of the ironic elements of this is that I thought the best on the runway was Aja.
Hers was sickening.
Loved Aja's. It was very anime. It was very, like, very, very, very creative.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of girls who did very, very well in this challenge. It was pretty funny, pretty fun. But Aja's is the one that stood out to me the most.
Yeah.
And so it was sad that Aja did so poorly in the acting challenge, but so well on the runway challenge.
Right.
And
you gotta nail both of them, girl.
And one of the people that I thought was stellar in this was Shangela coming out dressed as Korn.
Oh my girl, gosh, that was so good.
She came out dressed as Korn, and then she took off her wig, and underneath her wig was like some kind of yarn-looking cornrow type of braids.
With popcorn in it.
It was pretty funny, and I thought that her look was fairly amazing as well. So, ultimately, the bottom three?
They gagged us and gave us the bottom three, and it was Milk.
Milk.
Chi-Chi.
Chi-Chi Devane and Aja.
Yeah.
Now, I want to say Chi-Chi Devane also looked beautiful on the runway.
Oh my gosh, she looked beautiful.
It was the best that Chi-Chi Devane has probably ever looked. She looked so good on the runway. Mm-hmm. And during the Wigs on Wigs on Wigs challenge, best I've ever seen her look. So we get in the bottom three, Milk, Chi-Chi, and Aja. So in the top two are Benda LaCreme and
Kennedy Davenport.
So they end up lip-syncing to Green Light by Lorde, which is a horrible song to be...
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, girl...
I was like, you gave them a ballad, girl.
It's not even a good ballad. You gave them a mid-tempo, nothing.
I'd be scared of those kind of ballads because that's something that could send both people home. But it's like, you can't blame that on me. It was the song.
Yeah, the song was a bad choice. Ugh. They must have, that shit must have been... They must have gotten a 69-cent sale on iTunes, something, bitch, because... That song was just bad. Anyway, so Kennedy performs it in very, very slow, typical ballad fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Benda LaCreme is over there flipping her hair around or whatever, doing whatever she does. I thought that was a mess.
It was a mess.
It was embarrassing to me to watch. And it was. It was embarrassing to watch. As it turns out,
Kennedy wins. And without a heart, girl... RuPaul really was able to get the words out of her mouth before she said, I'm sending Milk home.
The thing was, remember, Milk had come for Kennedy early in the show, and of course, I knew it, girl.
That's what she gets for just being a rude hoe, girl. She could have kept her mouth closed.
Well, let me just say, all three of them were really bad in the acting challenge, okay? They missed their mark. I felt that Milk was probably... I thought Chi-Chi was the worst of the three in the acting challenge.
I thought Chi-Chi was bad, but I was annoyed by Milk. I was just like, can we turn the volume off until this is done?
Well, fortunately, if it were me in the bottom, or in the top two, I would have had to say, Kennedy was trying to be so diplomatic, she's like, I've taken into consideration everything leading up until now and my professional opinion, basically being this bitch is reading bitches backstage and she's also a fright. She got to go. Meanwhile, if it was me, I would have basically based it on the fact that, in my opinion, Chi-Chi and Aja were horrible at the acting challenge, but they were two of the most beautiful on the runway,
mm-hmm.
by far better than Milk. Milk was wretched on the runway, too. Milk had this it was just bad all the way around.
She had these, confetti things on her face.
My thing was the wig. She had this wig that you could pull, a yakky...
Oh, my God, and you could see the black cup in it.
Yes,
oh
the yakky God. Hair ponytail out of. I was like, okay, that just looks low budget. And I'm telling you, once again... Y'all, they obviously know these challenges in advance. Because, it's clear at this point that they know the challenges in advance. Nobody comes with this kind of shit that they can just whip out in 5 hours or whatever. You had all this time to plan, and that's the best you could do? And on top of it, I was deeply offended because her wigs did not match. She had that short, orangey blonde bob.
And then the
yellow blonde, the number is 613, listeners. The 613 ponytail that she's pulling out of it. Bitch, those don't match.
No, absolutely.
You have all
not.
This extra time and you can't even make your hair match.
Right.
Much less make sure that we don't see that your black cone or whatever is popping out of there.
Why didn't she color the cone yellow if she was worried about it?
Girl.
Jesus.
Anyway. It was a mess. Ultimately, Milk goes home. Deservedly so.
Yeah.
There was an actual chant at my viewing party. Send Milk home.
Girl, if you went on Instagram and Twitter, there were so many people rooting for Milk to go home.
And that was probably before the episode started.
Right.
Milk is legitimately, I would really love.
She's one of these queens that went on there and messed up her, her.
Legacy. Yeah. There's a lip sync for your legacy, and then there's ooh, I fucked up my legacy. I would love to have Milk on the podcast because I want to talk to her and ask her in retrospect, watching herself, what she thinks.
Because she really thought she was going to win that challenge, bitch. Bibi Zaharie really cracked me up. She was like, what did she say? She was like, does she really think she won? Did she see this?
God bless Bibi, because Bibi is so diplomatic. Bibi is Bibi is hilarious because
she was like, I don't know how she can't see.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have Milk on to just, because I really think that.
Girl, not me. If she's going to sit here and feed into her own delusions, I can't, girl.
Oh, I would love for that too, because that would be its own that would be its own thing. But I would really love to have her on, because I think that quite often you can act a certain way and you may not even be aware that it's happening.
Right.
And I'm curious, when she's sort of sitting there at home or wherever she's at, watching these episodes, watching her performances, if she still feels the same way. Because,
yeah,
like, I firmly believe that there are people, and I've experienced this myself, where in my head, like, during something while it's going on, I'm like, ooh, this is fierce or whatever.
Right.
And then, or like, I'll walk out of the house, I'll be like, you can't tell me I don't look good. And
right.
And then I see the pictures, I'm like, what damn. The fuck?
Yeah.
Damn. I'm wondering if, when she watches these shows, if she's like, the word that comes to mind is like, my friends and I used to be like, ooh, I feel crunchy. Like, when you're like, ooh, yeah. Damn.
Yeah,
like, I wonder if she feels crunchy about this. Like one sudden gust of wind, she would just crack and shatter right on the spot.
You just really could not tell Milk anything, though.
Like, yeah.
Nothing. She was it, girl.
Yeah, I honestly, coming into this season, after having worked with her at San Jose Pride last year and seeing how beautiful she was, I felt like she could be a very strong competitor on this season.
Just kidding.
And then I saw it play out, and I'm like, ugh. Now, nope. You know, what I found interesting about that experience working with her, and I may have said this on a past episode, I know I've said it at the Lookout viewing parties, is that when I worked with Milk, I also worked with Chi-Chi on that same show, and I felt like they were such polar opposites of each other, because Chi-Chi, her performance slayed, but her look was super basic. Meanwhile, Milk's look was super beautiful, but her performance was super basic. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I was wondering, you know, I'm like, whoa, these are two polar opposite people.
Right.
And mm-hmm. whatever, as it turned out, it was all bad. Anyway, Milk went home. So now, fast forwarding to the most recent episode of RuPaul's All-Star Drag Race. What was the challenge? I'm trying to remember this past week's challenge.
It was Snatch Game, girl.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. It was Snatch Game. Snatch Game, of course, the most iconic episode of Drag Race every season. Right. And one would think that these All-Stars would really, really bring it.
It was kind of what it was.
I thought it was pretty meh. I did not feel that it was that special. I did not feel that it was that interesting. So the girls are doing Snatch Game. Shangela was portraying Jennifer Lewis, who is her aunt.
Which is good. Not her real aunt, but like her, her play aunt. But her Jennifer Lewis was spot on.
Part of me felt like that was a little bit of a cop-out, though, because...
Well, originally, she was going to do Miss Cleo, and RuPaul thought her accent sounded more Irish than Jamaican.
Which I don't know. Anyway, so she was going to do Miss Cleo. I think it should have been more fun if she was Miss Cleo than Jennifer Lewis. She was a spot-on Jennifer Lewis, but at the same time, part of me, the reason I feel it's a cop-out is because they are so close personally, and also because of the fact that there's just something to be said. I think that it's much more interesting when somebody takes a character that is not particularly funny and makes that character hilariously funny. I'm thinking back when Jinx did Little Edie, like, that's not a character that's necessarily comedic, okay. But she made it very funny. Or when Ben de la Creme on her season did that old British actress. Uh-huh. Well, I can't remember which old British actress she did.
Me neither.
Like, whatever. But also hilarious.
She did Paul Lynde this time.
Yes, I was not a fan of that. Again, I thought that, first of all, I think that allowing people to do male characters is a little bit touchy. I don't necessarily think that's the best idea. Mm-hmm. Number one. And number two, yes, she was terrific in what she did, and she was kind of spot on in her impersonation, but the reason that she was hilarious as Paul Lynde is because I felt like she probably stole his shtick mm-hmm. and just regurgitating and like being able to comedically be well timed enough to deliver a comic's one-liners
right.
is great. Mm-hmm. But they're already somebody else's comedy act.
Set out for you.
You know, yeah. like, I mean, she may not have done that exactly. Like, she may not have copied his exact wording or whatever. But that's what he was known for. Like, he wasn't something... He was best known as being a comedian to deliver one-liners on a show similar to the Snatch Game. He was on the Hollywood Squares, and he would deliver those one-liners.
But you know who did a terrible job at that? Trixie. Trixie did RuPaul, and... tried to do the same thing, and it was awful.
It was. Did you see this thing on... I saw this, like, little video on Twitter where somebody said, and Fifi O'Hara retweeted it, and the person said, if Trixie had been edited to be funny, and she took the same shtick, and she put it together, that some person took mm-hmm. the shtick, put it together, and had a laugh track underneath it, and whatever... And it made it come across much more enjoyable.
Because there was a laugh track?
Because there was a laugh track in the way it was positioned to make her seem funny. And it's true. Like, I do believe that that is entirely possible to, like...
Maybe.
It is. It's entirely possible to edit a situation where somebody seems much funnier by cutting out some of the awkward timing or boosting it or whatever. I will give you a prime example of a person who is perfect for that. Pandora Box. Pandora Box is hilarious mm-hmm. when she is edited. Pandora Box, when she is not edited, is not nearly as funny.
Trap.
She's good at delivering like one-liners here and there, and if they're well-timed in the context of something bigger, she's funny. But if you give her 20 minutes uninterrupted, she's not particularly hilarious.
No.
So Trixie's shtick as RuPaul was painful, is what I would call it. Painful.
It was pretty hard to watch. I was like, damn, girl.
And Shangela was like, I blame the internet for this.
I do too.
She was like, y'all told her this was funny. Right. Y'all said that this was funny because apparently Trixie does it on her YouTube.
She does it on her YouTube, yeah.
Well, whatever. It was terrible. It was painful and dreadful. I thought that Aja as Crystal LaBeija
was perfect.
Was very funny.
Perfect.
I laughed out loud several times at that bullshit. I thought that Bebe Zaharbanneh as Grace Jones was, she was sort decent. Of embodied it, yeah. but she wasn't funny.
Yeah, she had like a moment.
So there was a few other situations that, I'm trying to remember some of the
Kennedy
other girls.
Kennedy did Phaedra Parks, which was not funny.
It was bad. It was not funny.
Which is so disappointing considering she won Snatch Game her season.
Yes.
And how funny she is. I mean, she won the last challenge because she was so funny.
Yes, I find it interesting because I don't think of her as funny at all. When I think of her, and after having spent a little time with her, I don't think of her as funny in the least.
I don't know. But I think she's hilarious. Like I think
she has the ability, but I think that she's very hit or miss with those things. So
they had Kristen.
Kristen Chenoweth was on the Snatch Game as Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly why that was, but she was there. Then on the runway, they were the theme was flowers.
Yeah.
On the runway. And most of the people came down the runway looking quite lovely, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I did find, like, Bebe Zaharbanneh came down and she was all black. She had flowers on her dress, but...
I think she needed something.
It needed a pop of color. There needed to be something there.
Exactly.
I remember Trixie, I was thinking when I saw Trixie's whole outfit for some reason looked like the only thing missing from it was one of those sugar skull masks for, like, a Dia de los Muertos look.
Yeah.
It was very that to me.
I felt like Aja's wasn't that good. She had this pink outfit, or it was, like, pink or white or something, and then she had that yellow wig and some yellow pumps or shoes to match it. I wasn't a fan of her look this week.
Shangela came out dressed as Beyonce, pregnant Beyonce.
Perfect.
It
was
so
perfect.
It comes down, once again, the dual winners of this are...
Ben and Shangela.
Ben de la Creme and Shangela, who have now been in the top three times each, I think.
No, Shangela's been in the top three twice. But Shangela's won the challenge the same amount of times as Ben.
So, okay, well, it was...
Ben has not been in the top yet.
Ben has always been in the top. And then the bottom three turn out to be Kennedy Davenport, Chi Chi Devane, and Trixie Mattel. So there's a lot of boo-hooing. Oh, my God. I thought this was my challenge to win from Trixie. And, like, I thought it was so funny or whatever. So, girl, can you please... Do you not... She clearly doesn't listen to the episodes because every time I'm listening to one of the episodes, all I can hear is her fucking chains, like, jingling over here. So, as it turns out, now, Chi-Chi has been in the bottom every time.
Pretty much.
I think every time. She may not have been in the bottom the first time.
She was in the bottom the first time.
Well, so she's been in the bottom every time. Like, every time. Every single episode, she's been in the bottom.
And she finally went home, y'all.
So, and she finally goes home. Now, I think that RuPaul gives the two girls, Bendela and Shangela, she splits the prize. She's like, you both win.
Right.
And she then says, hold on just a second. Package arriving. All right, we are back, y'all. I got another package. My best friend, Shigellarella, keeps sending me damn clothes, which I'm very excited about, but there's legit a stack of clothes next to us. And
well, there's stacks of clothes all over this house.
Yes, but there's a stack of brand new drag clothes right next to us while we're recording this. And as it turns out, I'm not exactly sure why, but this particular package is the third version of the same outfit. Anyway,
maybe
back...
Maybe press the buy button 3 times or something.
I don't know. We'll be sending that shit back. Anyway, as it turns out, RuPaul gives the girls an opportunity because she has split the winner's prize.
To both be able to send somebody.
Yes, they could send possibly 2 of the 3 bottom contestants home. Now, girl, it's already been let the cat out of the bag that Chi-Chi is the one they end up sending home. Girlfriend has been in the bottom every episode. It's time. She's ready to go home. She's given up. Whatever. So they both pick her. Bitch, if I was either Shangela or Bendela Creme, Trixie Mattel would be sitting at home this week.
She would be sitting home. I would have sent that ass home, girl.
And I know 100% that the RuPaul's Drag Race viewing audience would have hated me, but I'm sorry. This is a game of strategy and smarts.
I don't think that's true. There's been a lot of people online that have been talking about how a lot of people have been giving Shangela shit for not sending Trixie home. Apparently,
well, if and you know, I'm not going to give her shit. But what I will say is, I 100% believe this decision is going to bite them in the ass. I believe it.
I don't. I think all the challenges that Trixie could have came up on, she had her chance. That, like, they were her challenges. The challenges that are going to come up next, she's going to have to beat these other queens. It's not going to happen.
Well, this is...
So you still think Trixie can win this?
I still think Trixie could win this.
I don't.
But I
never thought she could win it from the beginning.
I
think Trixie has shown herself to, you know... be another one of these Instagram queens.
I think that she's way beyond that. The reason I say, like, she's way beyond that is because my idea of an Instagram queen is a queen who generally only actually looks good on Instagram. I think Trixie actually looks the way Trixie looks all the time. So
Trixie's a look, I'll say that. She's definitely a look, but, I mean, she has not delivered shit. She didn't really deliver anything during her season either besides her look.
Well, and people love it, but what I will say... is that I was confused as fuck when they did not send her home. This is how I view it. Especially with Shangela sitting there talking about strategy and
right,
shit.
Right, girl.
I was dumbfounded because this is a game where if you recognize that, I guess that these girls are holding true to their decision the first episode where they're going to send it home based on who deserves to go home. No, ma'am. They had one of the people who presumably, certainly in this, of these three, Trixie is the strongest going forward.
Right.
Kennedy and Chi-Chi. Chi-Chi at this point was a sitting duck. She's going to be in the bottom next week. You're going to send her home next week. Kennedy's been in and out of the bottom a few times. This is her second time.
Kennedy was in the bottom.
She is somebody who probably is not hitting her stride either. But
I don't know. But Kennedy's at least won a challenge.
But Trixie, I think that overall Trixie has a better chance of going to the finale than Kennedy or Chi-Chi. Why? I would have sent that ass home.
I agree with that as far as, like, her being a better contender than Chi-Chi, but Kennedy's actually won some challenges. And has proved, like, I think she's proven her spot. Trixie, I don't think, has done anything special. She hasn't even came in the top yet.
Well, yeah, she's like, I still really believe that this will bite them in the ass. And I would have sent her home based on the fact that
she, I would have sent her home.
I would have sent her home based on the idea that with Kennedy, I believe we've seen the best of Kennedy. I think that we've seen the best of what we're going to get from Kennedy. I do think that. I think that that...
You think Trixie's going to show us more?
I think that Trixie... I think that there's more opportunities for Trixie to capitalize on shit than there is for Kennedy to capitalize on shit.
I don't think I agree with that.
I mean, it is yet to be proven. We've got like seven more girls or six more girls or something
at
this point.
And we still haven't... we've got you're about right. And then we have, of course, the episode where they're going to bring somebody back.
Right. So, I mean, I believe that if it were me, I would have sent Kennedy home. I would have taken the heat. I'd have been like...
You mean Trixie.
I'm sorry, yes. I'd have sent Trixie home because, girl, the strongest have to go first. And if... Let me tell you...
I don't think she's the strongest.
Let me tell you, bitch. Well, I think that she's the strongest of those three. Like, I believe she is the strongest of those three. Despite the fact that Kennedy has finished in the top, Kennedy is also, this was Kennedy's second time in the bottom. So, you know, what I also think is that the first time Shangela or Benda La Creme goes in the bottom, those girls can kiss their ass goodbye.
But the thing is, like, if, let's say Kennedy ends up in the top again, whoever she's in the top against with, you know, Kennedy is gonna win because Kennedy can lip sync like nobody's business. Trixie may end up in the top, but she's not gonna win.
Well, you never can tell because Benda La Creme has won a fucking lip sync, and I've like.
Well, Benda La Creme is fucking hilarious.
Yes, I mean, let's hope that like I mean, sometimes I don't understand. I think, quite honestly, I think that who wins is up to the discretion of RuPaul, and that can be for storyline purposes or whatever. But, you know, let's just say I really think that if I had a chance to send somebody home who I felt was a strong competitor, I would do it. And
oh, definitely. Yeah.
And I think that there would have been a girl, you're too strong, I want to win, and you got to clear the path, bitch. So right now, I think that we are starting to see a very solid block of girls. I think Aja is proving more formidable than I thought she would have been. I do think that she definitely gets a boost for the most improved of the girls.
Yeah,
I mean, definitely the most improved.
I mean,
improved.
I don't think she's, you know, the most polished, but she's the most improved by far.
Yes, and I would say that the more each episode plays out, the more I begin to believe this rumor that Bibi Zaharbanay is a mole for RuPaul.
I buy it.
I believe it completely. And I think that one of the reasons why I buy it is because if she wants to have the RuPaul's All-Stars winners season, having Bibi come in against these people who are so much better known than she is.
Yeah.
Puts her at a disadvantage because she doesn't have, like, the social media support or whatever.
But this will help that.
And this will help that because Bibi is being reintroduced to people. Now, Bibi is not being reintroduced as a very strong competitor, but
she's actually getting a taste of what it's like before she has to go back in there.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember that Bibi won season one, but it was a very different show. Mm-hmm. And she said that. Like, Bibi, they were kind of reading her because Bibi didn't know. She was like, somebody said, I think it was Aja, she's like, that happened last year too. And Bibi was like, oh, I don't know. I didn't know. Yeah. I mean, girl, yeah. She's like, oops, bitch, sorry about it. Didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, Bibi's a little bit out of the loop of Drag Race because it's been so long. And I think she watches, but she's never been an avid follower of the show because unlike most of the girls who came in seasons after hers, she went in to compete in something and the other girls have been inspired to apply based on what they've seen. And Bibi didn't have to really do that. They sort of laid the groundwork. And by the time, you know, season 2 and 3 happened, but certainly by the time season 4 happened, it was a completely different ball game altogether.
Right.
And, you know, even by season 3, it was totally different.
It was.
So season 3 being, of course, when Raja was competing and won. So that is what is going on RuPaul's All-Stars Drag Race season 3.
I think it's between Shanji and Ben. I would not be mad if either of the two won. I'm really hoping for Shangela.
I'm rooting for Shangela too. I think Shangela is the ultimate story of redemption, and I believe that it is like the perfect Drag Race story for her to come back, you know, start when she was brand new and go home first and then come back and finish top 5 and then come back as an all-star and win.
That would be everything.
Like, it would be epic for her, and I think that she 100% deserves it.
Definitely.
Ben de la Creme, I wouldn't be mad about her either.
Because she's so talented, and she would deserve it, you know?
I mean, the other girls who are on this season, I'm looking at it, and I'm like,
go home.
Yeah, I'm kind of not, you know, I'm not seeing any of them be...
It's almost hard to even remember who else is on the show at this point.
And that's a really sad thing, like... Ben and Shangela sort of, like, dominating the top so often really is skewing. I mean, like, there's very rarely even a girl coming from behind. Like, you know, like, I mean, Kennedy came out of nowhere to win her challenge sort of type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that happening on a regular basis does not seem to... I'm not optimistic it's going to happen. I really believe that Trixie has that capacity, whereas I don't think others necessarily... might. I don't know. It would be nice to see BB, like, at least get into the top 2 sometime, you know?
But if she's a mole, that's not going to happen, girl.
Right. It's not. Anyway, that is the recap of RuPaul's All-Stars Drag Race. We will have more of that next week. Meanwhile, why don't we take a commercial break? We have a pre-recorded interview with out recording artist Matt Palmer. His new EP is out now, and he is releasing... single by single on YouTube. It's a visual album that he is releasing. He is an adorable... He's a cute little African-American man from L.A., Pearl.
All right.
And we have that interview, which we can bring to you right after these messages. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poya Delmar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
We'll be back in a moment.
Hey, guys. I'm John Nett, and we're Superfoot, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
Hi, it's Matt Matthews, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, Daddy's Barbershop. Located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro, Daddy's Barbershop was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Go visit Arlen, Jesse, and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop to get your hair done for the summer. Daddy's Barbershop is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
This is Alexis Michelle, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
Welcome back to more Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Poya Delmar. And at this time, I am happy to introduce our guest for this episode. His new EP, Get Lost, is available now on iTunes as well as on his YouTube channel. If you surf on over to YouTube, you'll find... Solo Act, the first single from Matt Palmer's visual EP, Get Lost, followed by the second single, the title track, Get Lost, and the most recent is Inevitably. Please welcome, at this time, independent out-recording artist, Matt Palmer. So thank you for talking today. I appreciate it. Thank you for joining the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I wanted to talk to you about what I have read is a new visual album. It's going to be like a whole visual album that you're putting out.
Yes.
And I noticed that the first 2 of the videos from the album are linked visually. I picked up on the fact that you're wearing like the same shirt in both videos. You can't get anything past me. So is the whole video package that's going to be coming out going to tell it in story? Is that what you mean by saying a video album?
Yeah, the idea of the visual EP, it's called Get Lost, by the way, the idea of it is that we're telling one complete story. So once it's all done, the hope is that it will work on its own as like individual music videos or little, you know, episodes, but also could be, you know, stitched together to actually be a short film kind of thing. It'll probably end up being around like 22 minutes. But yeah, it kind of is a story that is kind of one arc all the way through. It's not as like much in real time as the first two are. But yeah, the idea is that if you kind of go through each week, it's kind of like a musical web series where it's everything is interconnected that way.
Okay, I got it. It's already difficult for an individual who's an independent recording artist to put out an album or put out a music video. What made you decide to do the tremendous undertaking of, you know, a whole body of work that you're trying to interconnect like this?
Right. Well, I have done music videos before, and I feel like, obviously, nowadays, having a visual attached to the song is kind of really impactful. I, of course, as everyone did, watched Lemonade when it came out, the Beyoncé visual album, and it really was affecting to me, and it just made me think, oh, that would be great if I could figure out a way to have each song on the EP connect and have it be like a visual telling a story completely through. I knew it was a large undertaking, but honestly, I even since I was a little kid, I would listen to albums and wish that there was a music video for every song on them. So I thought, you know, why not give it a try? I think it's exciting to release them one week at a time so that, like, you can hopefully build some momentum and get more eyes on it each week. And, yeah, I just thought that'd be a great way to connect with the audience, that they actually get a visual representation along with the songs as well.
Yeah, it's a very exciting prospect, but a very difficult one. And I'm assuming that there are a team of people who are helping you bring this vision of yours to life. So tell me a little bit about the team.
Yeah, absolutely. So it started off with the songs, obviously. I wrote these 7 songs and figured out a way that they could kind of play to tell one story. And I can write songs and record and like arrange them to a point and obviously record the vocals myself. But when it comes to production and like making it sound as polished as I could, I reached out to some different producers that I found on SoundCloud and just on the internet. You know, most of these producers I've never even met in real life, to get finalized versions of those songs. And then I went to a director who I had worked with in the past on a couple of older videos of mine. His name is Ryan Bartley. And he just kind of pitched him the idea. And I was like, what do you think about creating a video for every song and kind of ending up with a short film? And they were so excited about the idea because it was just something kind of different and out of the box. And, you know, they liked the music. And so it was mostly myself, Ryan, and Aaron, who is executive producing, along with Ryan, the project that, you know, they work in film out here. And so they have a lot of people that they know and a lot of people that luckily wanted to be involved. Yeah, that's kind of how it all came together. Then I reached out blindly to Max Emerson because obviously he has, you know, such a following, and I thought it would be really cool if he was also in it with me, just as like the boyfriend character. And he was nice enough to be a part of it, and so that's kind of how it all came together.
One of the things I love about LA is that there's a sort of the undercurrent of creativity, and so many people are there looking for opportunities and like their big break or things of that nature. So it seems like you could probably gather together an incredible talent pool of individuals, probably on a budget, which of course I'm assuming that as an independent musician you are. And
yes,
yeah, definitely. So that's very helpful about that city, I think, is that the creativity sort of thrives there.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree.
Get Lost is like a
is
fun. It's poppy. Is the rest of the music from the record in the similar vein?
It definitely starts off really high. Like, it starts off really poppy and, you know, up-tempo and fun to listen to. And I hope a lot of it's fun to listen to. But definitely, as it goes on, it takes a bit of a turn because, you know, like a lot of relationships that don't last forever, like, there's a point in the relationship where things take a turn. And it's not as fun and, you know, you're not as starry-eyed about it. And so that's kind of representative in the music and in the videos as well. So I think that the first 3 tracks, especially, there's another song called Inevitably that's also really up-tempo and poppy. But then things kind of take a turn and, you know, it still stays up-tempo. It still stays kind of dance-inspired, but it definitely has a bit of a darker tone comes into play because you know, life and relationships are not always perfect. And so it's fun to write songs that play into that, the fact that sometimes there are imperfections, but people hopefully can relate.
Have you always been interested in and geared towards recording, like, poppier music, or have you kind of branched out into find out other genres?
I think initially when I started doing music that, like, anybody cared about, it was still pop, but it was probably more R&B leaning. Like, it was a lot of neo comparisons and stuff when I first came out. So this is probably my first album where it's more blatantly dance, you know, inspired. But, you know, I grew up on, you know, Mariah Carey and Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson and Babyface. So, that whole pop thing, or, like, a melodic R&B-inspired sound, I've always been drawn to. But this is kind of the first time that, like, you know, some of my more dancey influences come into play as well. But I think nowadays genres are so melded, like, there's so much less of a barrier between, you know, one genre and the next, that it's kind of fun to put them all together and see what comes out, you know, just from all my disparate influences and, like, how it all works together. So, yeah.
I'm curious what your experience is like being open. You're very open about your sexuality. It's very much reflected in the videos. So, presumably, I would guess you're a gay male.
Yes, that's correct.
So, as a gay male artist, I'm curious what your experience has been in the music industry by not trying to downplay that in the least.
Well, it was a decision I made maybe 4 years ago now. The first music video that I made that had a male love interest came out in, I think, 2014, maybe February. We get to a point in life where it just, you know, I'm not two separate people. I'm not, you know, Matt Palmer the musician and Matt Palmer the person. It's all intertwined in itself. And I feel like being honest about, you know, the people and I'm attracted to and the actual feelings I felt in these scenarios has made my music better. I've a couple of times run into people that are, you know, more on the music industry side of things that say, oh, this isn't a good idea, or like certain producers that are uncomfortable with some of the lyrics just because I'm singing about a guy. And, you know, for them, it's just like, okay, well, then we don't need to be working together because this is what it's going to be. Like, if I'm the artist and, like, this is the art I create because it is what's truly happening in my life. You know, I think that's the best art that gets made. It's like you're supposed to write what you know. And if I was writing and pretending to be someone I'm not, I feel like my music would be worse right now. So, yeah, I feel like at some point, it's like, I don't really have a choice. It's like, this is just what it is and what it's going to be. So,
I really think that, especially in situations, for example, with music where an individual is trying to convey emotions and you're trying to sound authentic and genuine, if you're not being authentic and genuine about what you're portraying, that probably would take a tremendous impact on the ability for the music to even be relatable to some people, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, yeah, I feel like people can kind of smell it if you're faking it or if you're pretending to be something you're not, especially in a medium that's so personal just in nature as music. So I feel like, there's just, you kind of be able to feel it would fall if I didn't, you know, if I wasn't out.
Now, what is your own coming out story? Aside from professionally, what was your coming out experience like as a person?
I realized, or like put two and two together, that I was gay pretty early, maybe when I was like 13 or 14, and I like told some friends, and I told my mom, and then I took it back, and it was the whole thing. And, you know, I felt like I kept taking little baby steps and like coming out fully in my life, just and personally through college. You know, it took me a long time to be okay with it myself and have my family be okay with it. Most of my friends were fine. Like, there was really not much of a hurdle. But I think I just got sick of trying to pretend to be what I wasn't. And, you know, once I figured out, oh, this is why you feel different, this is why you have, you know, these crushes on boys in your class and not girls, like, this is what's happening. It kind of went down that path. And I feel like even if your parents initially aren't overjoyed with the news, like, if you're coming out, and they just need, you know, at least in my case, they just needed time to get used to it, just like I needed time to get used to it. So if anyone has an imperfect coming out, I would say, you know, hopefully hold on, and if your parents are great parents, which hopefully they are, they will come around, even if it takes them a little bit of time.
Yeah, I think that in most situations, that's the case. I think that, unfortunately, there's scenarios where, for example, like, people come from a deeply religious background or things of that nature, which can really make it difficult, but it also can be very damaging. I'm not downplaying, you know, anybody's religion, but I definitely think that when you come from that kind of environment, it can be much more difficult. And certainly there are certain ethnic backgrounds and origins that can be a little bit more challenging as well, but I think the biggest impact that most of the time that those have, other than the possibility that it can create lasting rifts between family members and loved ones, is the fact that people internalize those teachings and then later on can often abuse themselves because of their own beliefs internally.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that is very real. Not everyone is as lucky as I was to have their parents come around, and I understand that. There's like a huge population of homeless LGBT youth for that reason. So obviously I can't imagine what that's like, but I realize that that's the reality. But I guess my hope, and like just in my optimistic point of view, is that we're moving in the right direction as a country and or society, and hopefully that is becoming less prevalent. I think it's important to have art and to have visibility and to have, you know, the characters on Modern Family even, just like seeing that, I feel like makes more of a difference than people even realize. So that's why I think it's important for me, you know, even if just a couple, you know, if however many people see this video or see my videos and see that, like, this is just another story, just another person, and can maybe relate to their own life, and maybe that will change, you know, a mind or two.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that is one of the reasons why every person who comes out is very important. Like, the coming out experience is important because it's not, you know, we see it from like a very near, a close up perspective, because it's our own life and, you know, it sometimes presents us challenges or obstacles. But what we don't realize is the ripple effect always. You know, when, in your case, you came out, you decided to be open and honest in your music, and that opens your art up to impacting other people somewhere along the line. In my case, you know, the same thing. I came out and I live the life that I live, and we never know exactly who our presence is going to touch and how it's going to affect those individuals. So it's a reason that representation in media and other places is so important, incredibly important.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
So tell me a little bit about the kind of responses that people have had in a positive fashion to the music that's come out so far from this album.
I think people have been responding generally very positively. I think people like the lyrical content, because my whole goal of the whole thing is, like you mentioned, I like a big pop song, I like a catchy melody, and I like really, you know, polished production, but I really wanted to make sure that the lyrics came from a true and real place, and that becomes even more evident as the EP goes on and things get a little bit more serious. So those have been like the comments that I've really appreciated. It's people that are, you know, that can, you know, even type out the lyrics, like a part of the lyric of solo acts and stuff, and write them in the comments and say that they relate, that they have felt this before, and that this point of view is one that they can understand and have seen in themselves or with, you know, other people in their lives. And so, yeah, I think I'm proud of a lot of parts of it, but I feel like lyrically, I hope that it connects to people, especially, you know, again, as it goes on. And really, I hope it connects in a strong way, because I definitely took my time and thought about how I really felt and tried to get that on the EP.
Yeah, I really like the lyrical content of Solo Act in particular, which discusses, for the listeners who have not heard it, the idea that the person, the perspective of this, the person singing, presumably you, that you're interested in a relationship, but you're accustomed to being a solo act because you don't want to get hurt emotionally. So there's like that internalized need for distance that I think that so many people have. It's the come close, no, go away idea.
Right. You're right. Yeah, no, I feel like there's a part in, like, the pre-chorus is basically, like, I don't, you know, kind of me just listing reasons why I avoid this or why I might turn away a guy that could be good for me. It's because, you know, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to put in the work. And, like, it's just going to take some getting used to the idea of being one person in a relationship. So, like, you're always beholden to someone. And I feel like a lot of people, but especially LGBT people, can relate to feeling like, oh, I'm the single one, you know, just because of the circumstance I'm in. And so when something comes along that is a real possibility for a relationship, you know, sometimes people get scared because it's just a change. It's a big change. So yeah, that was kind of the idea of that song.
Yeah, I was actually talking to someone this afternoon about a similar concept, and it's that people, for example, he was saying that he doesn't like to hold hands on first dates because it sends this impression that the two are already somehow coupled or whatever. And I said, well, I think that a lot of people may want that, but they don't realize, for example, that there's a lot of work that comes with making that last more than like one date or two dates or,
right.
You know, there's a lot that comes with that. And I really do believe that so many of the people in the queer community, males specifically, love the idea of being with a boyfriend, but they don't want to actually have to do what is required to stay with a boyfriend.
Right.
It's like, I think I've even found myself in that situation a couple times.
Right. Yeah, no, I feel like, you know, and this is probably even more prevalent in L.A., it's just there's a, you know, a Peter Pan complex, but I feel like a lot of people have, like straight and gay men, I feel like have that. But at least in my personal opinion, and this isn't true for everyone, but, it, you know, if you know, kids are very much a decision for a gay man and very much like there's not as stringent of a biological clock. And so a lot of people are just like, why not just go have fun? Why not? And like, that's great if that's what you want to do. But if you, I don't know. I feel like if you want to be in a relationship, it involves putting someone's needs, you know, sometimes ahead of yours or definitely on equal footing with yours. And that's, I mean, personally myself, I know that's like not easy for me to do. And so I imagine it's not easy for everyone.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think that that's all well and good. Like I noticed that gay men specifically have this thing, like in our 20s, I have no idea how old you are, but you're clearly, I watched the video, you're clearly like generations younger than I am. So, but, you know, in our 20s, it's like, let's have fun. And a lot of times we'll get, you know, in relationships that are built and centered around fun. And then in our 30s, we become jaded because of the fact that the relationships in our 20s didn't work out. And so then it's like, forget it. I'm just going to like fly solo for a while. And then in your 40s, you're like, okay, maybe I'd like to be in a relationship. And then all of a sudden, everybody who's actually your age only wants to be in a relationship with the people in their 20s. And you're like, well, good God, I'm screwed. I'm going to die. I'm going to die as Dorothy Spornak. This is horrible.
I think it's hard out there just to get the timing right. I feel like no one really knows what they're doing, and hopefully it works out, and I'm sure it will for everybody in their own way, but yeah, it does sometimes feel like, you know, you're against a rock in a hard place. It's like, how did I get to here? This was supposed to be fun and easy and a nice thing, like I saw in the movies.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you now, Matt, start looking for three other people who you think are going to die old and alone and just plan to move into a retirement community with them. It's just the way it's going to happen for you. And if it doesn't, then I'm just really going to be bitter because, yeah.
All right, good note. I will make sure to do that.
I mean, I've already lined mine up. My best friend and I are like, I was like, okay, girl, you got a better job than I do, so you better start saving up so we can get adjacent beds at the old folks' home. Like, let's just plan away. Like, that's the 20-year plan, bitch. Let's get on it.
That's not a bad plan. I don't hate that.
So, obviously, this is about relationships. This whole album is about presumably maybe one relationship, but I think it's probably built on a conglomeration of experiences that you've had. So what is dating like in LA in general and for you specifically?
You know, I feel like for a long time I was like the king of the, what, 1 month, 2 month relationship, like a relationship that like feels like it's going to go somewhere but never fully takes off the ground. And, you know, I feel like that is common everywhere, but that's, I feel like, something that's very common in L.A., just because, you know, why would you tie yourself to one person when there's just so many people out there for you to experience or to try out and all this? So I am a bit of a romantic, and, you know, not to say this is everyone else's fault, but, you know, maybe it's part of what the EP is about is, like, me kind of doing things I wouldn't normally do because I am starry-eyed about the possibility of this guy and, you know, maybe projecting my wants onto him more than getting to know him for who he is, and maybe that's the person I don't want to be with. And so I feel like that's something that can happen on either side of it. Like, you can really try to make yourself into someone that you aren't to fit, you know, what they're looking for, or try to make the person you're with into someone that they're not because you want them to be the person you're looking for. So, I don't know. I feel like I dating anywhere is probably difficult, you know, but this is just my experience. I've been in L.A. for, like, 8 years now, and it's dating's not always easy.
In L.A., every city presents its own challenges. Every place has its own challenges. L.A., for those who have not been to Los Angeles, is enormous. It is enormous, and the possibilities that you could conceivably meet somebody who literally lives hours away from you, who has the same LA address as you, it's actual. It's real. You know, like,
yeah,
Los Angeles is so huge. And I mean, I think that sometimes that can be great for dating. And there are other times when, you know, like, I think about people in New York, for example. Like, people in New York are considered so aggressive by West Coast standards, but it's because New York City is so huge that if you don't, like, make the move when you, the first time you see somebody, you may never see that person again, you know?
Right.
San Francisco, we don't have that. You can fall on top of the same 35 homosexuals every single day. So, no need to rush around here. No need to rush, apparently. You mentioned some of your musical influences growing up already, but tell me how each of those necessarily factors into the kind of the music that you like to produce for yourself.
Well, Mariah is, like, my number one.
Mine too. We're married. You and I need to get married. That's it. Like, all we need is Mariah.
Exactly. Like, if all music was gone, but we had Mariah's discography, I would survive. I'd be fine. So I think, what I always did from her is I love, you know, her songs that are kind of, I felt like in the 90s she had a lot of songs that were, like, very happy but didn't seem, like, cheesy about it. Like, I always go back to Always Be My Baby as, like, such a perfect song. I feel like it is cool and easy to listen to and relatable and lyrically interesting, and I just think her melody on it and on most of her music is just always so lovely. Obviously, she has such a great, incredible voice that people sometimes forget that she's writing the songs, and they're just melodically hold up so beautifully and so well. So that's kind of where I always start with a melody, because that was always what drew me to her. And I feel like as I've grown up, my lyrics and the production influences I've had have kind of expanded. Like, I really love what, like, Years and Years do and what MNEK does and Disclosure. Like, a lot of those dance influences came into play on this album. But obviously, you know, I grew up loving R&B singers. You know, I beyond Mariah, I loved Whitney, and I loved Michael Jackson. And so I feel like there's a trend now of kind of whisper singing, which I don't hate. Like, I like Selena Gomez. I think she's great. But I made it a point on this record to kind of really sing, because I feel like I miss that. Like, I miss hearing, you know, people do the runs, and, you know, I just feel like there's something that you get kind of chilled when someone is really singing their face off. And I feel like in pop music sometimes today, it's like, it's very light on that, and I made it a point for that to be a main focus of this album. Even though it's up-tempo and dancey, I wanted the vocal element to still be there.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, too, because, of course, gay men, without question, love their divas with a big voice. And I feel like right now in pop music, there feels like a noticeable lack, especially of female singers who really have that major, powerful voice. They're, you know, I don't feel... We got several generations of incredible vocalists who could really, really sing. And now, I don't know what it is, but people who can really, really sing, that does not seem to be the focus of the music industry at all.
Right. Yeah, it's just, I feel like it's just a weird stylistic choice. Like, people like to be as simple and as, you know, it's easy to sing along to. So it's, yeah, I guess that's nice for people. It's like easy on the radio just to like hear the couple of notes that are sung and to sing them back. But yeah, no, I miss it. I mean, I feel like there are obviously exceptions. Like, I don't know if you heard the new Kelly Clarkson album, but she's really, obviously she won a singing competition, but she just sounds better than she ever has. Yeah, I feel like young kids really like an Ariana Grande, and I feel like she has some talent. And but you're right. I feel like there's not like that huge big vocalist thing like I feel like there was when I was growing up. And I hope it comes back. I miss it.
So just so you know, Kelly Clarkson was on the podcast a couple months ago.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
Wow! Oh my gosh!
And her album is probably my favorite album of the last couple of years. It is so good. It is so amazing. She sounds phenomenal. I really enjoy, I've always enjoyed Pink's vocal qualities, and Pink's album dropped right at the same time as Kelly's did. And that also an incredible album for somebody that, you know, has a voice, you know, like it's like, okay, we know she can just sing her face right off. But yeah, Kelly's album is incredible, and it was a real joy and pleasure to have her on talking about that process and everything that goes into it. And I think that, yeah, obviously she won a singing competition, that so we know she can sing, but whether or not you choose to use that voice is still up to you, and she gives it her all on that record.
Absolutely. And I think she's putting out the ballad I Don't Think About You next, and I'm so excited to hear her perform that, because it's so, I know it's very vocally demanding, but I know she can do it, and I just can't wait to see her do that live for the first time.
My favorite song on that record, I think, is Cruel.
So, Cruel is great.
I love it. Yeah, I think that it has some, to me, it has some influences that remind me of kind of old school Mariah a little bit. So
absolutely.
I'm all good with it. We're all good with Miss Kelly. So how can people find you on social media?
I should be Matt Palmer Music everywhere. So if you want to see the videos, you should be able to go to youtube.com/Matt Palmer Music. There are 7 songs completely, and so we'll be updating them every week. I think a new one is premiering, though I assume there will be 3 up by the time you look there. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Matt Palmer Music all over the internet. And then MattPalmerMusic.com, you can find me there as well.
Thank you. That's fantastic, and I'm glad. You know, I'm still trying to get over the fact that, and I love, this is one of the things that I do love about modern technology and the way the world works now, is that you said that you basically collaborated with producers and musicians that you've never even met because you met on the internet. And I think that that is so phenomenal. I love the way the world has been brought close in a creative sense like that, because, you know, there is somebody out there right now listening who has a tremendous amount of talent in one area of their life, but maybe they're not a vocalist. And so they want to produce music, and you are a vocalist, and you need somebody to produce that. And I just love the way the world works in that way.
I completely agree. I feel like, it's easier than ever to find collaborators online. And I'm actually, with the next song, Inevitably, I was telling you about, there's going to be a remix contest on Indaba Music. So if someone out there is a producer and wants to make a version of my song Inevitably and wants to, you know, I'm going to recut the video for the winning remix. I'm going to, obviously there's a $250 reward. So if anyone's interested and has musical aspirations and wants to remix a song and even sing on it with me if you want, that vote should be up on indabamusic.com by the time you're listening.
So wait, what was that website?
Indaba, I-N-D-A-B-A, music.com.
Okay, great.
And, I used to work there, and they were so nice when I emailed them, and they were so happy to host this remix contest. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be really fun.
That's phenomenal. I have had such... The internet has been such a blessing to me. Like, when we started this podcast, it's been over 2 years ago now. Basically, I was able to secure amazing interviews with people just by Twitter, for example. Like, hey, do you want to do, you know? And so it brings people so close to us. Now, that's not how it happened with Kelly Clarkson, by the way. But but with many of our guests, like... You know, Oscar winner Patricia Arquette, like we had her on a couple months ago, and same thing. She saw a tweet and responded, and it just happened that fast. It was incredible. So I love the fact that you are incorporating the internet to help both promote your own music and give other people who are talented and undiscovered musicians and acts and artists opportunities. So that's wonderful, and thank you for doing that.
Yeah, of course. I'm with you. I think it's such an important tool. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff on the internet that's not great, like, Donald Trump's Twitter feed. But there's a lot of great stuff, and a lot of collaboration can happen for creative people. And you just can connect with a lot of people. So I'm all about it.
Well, thank you for joining us, Matt. I appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing both the remixes of Inevitably... We enjoy, we appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing the inevitable remixes of Inevitably. The fact that you can even sing it and I can't say it, like, speaks volumes for our respective talents. Nonetheless, I look forward to it, and we look forward to having you back in the future, perhaps, to talk about new exciting projects from you.
Yes, please. Thank you guys so much for having me, and really appreciate being here, and congratulations on all your success, and talking to Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, yeah. I nearly wet myself on that one. That was a big deal to me. So. So, thanks for joining us, and have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
That was singer Matt Palmer. His new visual EP, titled Get Lost, will be available on March 9th. Go over to Matt Palmer Music on YouTube to see the videos for his first several releases from the album right now. They're available on YouTube. Those videos also star Instagram celebrity Max Emerson. So go check them out on youtube.com/Matt Palmer Music. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I am Poet Elmar, and we will be back with more right after this.
Oh, she really came that way?
All right.
My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right.
I'm known as the Vanessa Williams of drag.
All right.
I am here to show people I still got it.
All right.
I need to get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Styles Radio. I don't get cute. I get drop-dead gorgeous.
And we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I am Poyet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We would be remiss if we did not mention, last week we saw one of the largest school shootings in U.S. history.
Yes, in Florida, girl.
In Parkland, Florida, a shooter entered a high school and killed 17 people.
He was a former student. He was 19 years old. He was actually expelled from the school for
behavioral conduct.
Yeah.
Something like making threats to other students or something to that effect. And it's been announced that apparently, I don't know.
Well, he had a machine gun.
Yes, he did. And it is the same kind of assault rifle that was used in the shootings in Las Vegas. And once again, you know, this is a situation that is so devastating because when scenarios like this happen, people call for gun control legislation. They call for laws to be passed to make it more difficult to purchase a gun or own a gun. This is a 19-year-old student. He is able to purchase a machine gun that within minutes is able to kill 17 people.
Someone who's not even able allowed to drink yet, y'all.
Yes. So the drinking laws are more restrictive
than a gun. How does that make sense?
So what people argue in this situation, people are calling for gun control legislation. And then you have people who are pro-gun, like pro-gun ownership, saying that that is impacts the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, which allows United States citizens to bear arms.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine, but I tweeted this earlier in the week, or late last week, rather, and said, if somebody can explain to me why an average, ordinary citizen needs to own a machine gun, I'm willing to listen.
But nobody needs to own a machine gun. For what? What are you shooting at?
If you are not in the military, you do not need to own a machine gun. There is no reason that one individual should be able to pull a trigger for a matter of seconds and kill dozens of people.
Dozens of people, girl.
Assault rifles like this are meant for military situations, scenarios of war. A private citizen does not need to own a machine gun. And by passing legislation that would, for example, outlaw machine guns or, you know, multiple clip rifles of this nature, meaning that you simply, instead of putting 10 bullets in a gun, you stick in a clip full of dozens and dozens of bullets that can be dispensed with a single pull of a trigger, there's no situation you can't say that is for hunting. Because what the fuck are you hunting? People is what you're hunting.
Right.
You can't say that it's for self-protection. Like, okay.
You need a fucking machine gun to protect yourself, girl?
Girl, you must really live in the hood, bitch, if you need a machine gun. I mean, right. You must live in the deepest, darkest fucking hood if you need a machine gun to protect yourself. So there's something that's being twisted here. People's understanding of what it means to have gun-restricted legislation, meaning that you would have to, for example, fill out all kinds of paperwork to own a gun. That way, if somebody, for example...
You should have to take a test.
Do you know, in Florida, you have to submit more paperwork to get a driver's license at 15 than you do to purchase a gun at Walmart? That is the true story.
Shit.
It's a matter of people saying that we are trying to roll back the Constitution of the United States. Well, I would like to remind people that the Constitution of the United States, when it was written in the 1700s, voting privileges were only afforded to white men.
Mm-hmm.
White men were the only ones allowed to vote. Yeah. That was written into the Constitution. The addition of women and people of color came much, much later through amendments to our Constitution. When the Second Amendment was written in the 1700s, things like a single-shot rifle...
Were the only, the heaviest kind of gun around.
No, single-shot rifles, the Winchester rifle, even those didn't exist. Those didn't exist until much, much later. When the Constitution was written, what they had in mind with the right to bear arms was a musket, meaning that you had to actually pack a little pebble, like a...
Didn't you have to use gunpowder and shit for
you had
too?
To pack a metal pebble into the end of a gun with gunpowder. You had to shove it down, and that's what you were using. So the fact that you were able to bear arms meant that you could
own a single-shot
rifle. Mm-hmm. One shot, and then you have to repack it, reload it, and shoot again. It meant that you were allowed to have that. That's what was written into our Constitution. Well, that's fine. If you want to own a musket, I support your ability to have that. I think every home should have one musket in it. That way we all get to bear our arms. I do not think that anyone needs a machine gun. You don't need a fucking Uzi or AR-47 or whatever the hell these things are that are killing multiple people.
Within seconds.
The reason that this is happening is because the NRA, the National Riflemen's Association, is a very wealthy organization.
Right.
And it pads the pockets of multiple, multiple politicians. So if for people in the United States, if you are listening, and I think that we might be reaching a tipping point. It's sad to say that I think that we are reaching a point of emotional exhaustion around school shootings, shootings in malls, shootings at concerts. It's shocking, but it's not unheard of anymore. It's sad, but it's not, like, unimaginable. There is no place that we have found yet that is safe to exist. You can't exist on a college campus because there have been multiple persons killed on college campuses in gun violence. You can't go to high school because there have been countless situations in schools where children have been shot and killed. You can't go to elementary school. Take Sandy Hook, where 22 students were killed, because you could be killed by a person with a rifle. You can't go to a concert in Las Vegas because you could be mowed down by a person in a nearby hotel tower with a machine gun. You can't go to the fucking movies because somebody could come into the movie theater and shoot your ass.
Girl, you can't go to church.
You can't go to church. But God forbid, because the people who are very much pro-guns will be quick to tell you that the only way to protect against a crazy person with a gun is for a sane person with an equally powerful gun to come along and save you. Well, I'm sorry. To me, that sounds like living in the fucking wild, wild west. I do not want to have to have, like, the gunslinger come along and save my ass because some crazy bitch has fucking gone off her rocker. Now, I would like to also remind people, recent legislation that was passed by the Obama administration to enforce stricter laws, including mental health tests and mental health requirements for people to own guns, were recently rolled back by the Trump administration, meaning that when Donald Trump tweets that this is not a gun issue, this is a mental health issue, fine. How about the fact that your recent legislation repeals pulled back on legislation that was in place to keep crazy people from owning guns? What this does not take into account, for example, is that you can purchase a gun and then a situation can trigger you and you can go fucking nuts. And now that you own your rifle, your machine gun, when your wife leaves you and you go cuckoo, now you got a machine gun sitting at home that you managed to slip under the fucking radar because you weren't crazy 2 years ago when you bought your rifle, your machine gun.
Right.
But now that you're fucking off your goddamn rocker, you're shooting up people at a concert. Now that your next door neighbor has pissed you off and you like, and your internalized racism makes you hate all whatever race of people, you're shooting up a fucking mall. Now that you know, you're some unstable Mabel who got expelled from high school, you're going back to the same high school and killing 17 students and teachers. This is not a situation that people, like, you know, and of course, sadly, in times of crisis, when immediately people are like, oh my God, we need gun control, some person from the NRA is going to be like, now is not the time to mention this. Don't politicize a tragedy. Well, the tragedy is already political.
Right.
Because if somebody had taken political action a day before this shooting that would have prevented it, that means the tragedy would have never happened. Politics and lawmakers are the only way that we are going to see a change. And fortunately, the students at this high school have decided that they are not going to take it anymore. They are young people who are now using social media to plan a protest. They are calling for sit-ins. There is currently right now a lion in front of the White House calling for stronger gun restrictions, led by students, young people, people some of whom are not even old enough to fucking vote, are out there and doing more. They are calling for their parents, their teachers, their legislatures, people who are adults, to protect them because they can't protect themselves.
Right.
They're 16. They can't buy their gun yet. They can't run out and buy their machine gun so they can... Girl...
Right.
Is that what we want? Do we want people in high schools to be toting their Uzis? All the students... I had to bring an Uzi to school so in case another crazy person with an Uzi came up in here, I could shoot back.
What do you think that would mean for bullying, girl? Oh, that's a whole nother story, girl.
I mean, really. Like, you know... What? Well... why is it just guns? Bitch, let me see somebody go up in a school with a knife and kill 17 people real quick.
Right.
You can't do it.
Right.
Go up in the school. Take your frying pan up in there, bitch. See if you can kill 17 people with that. No, girl.
Not going to
happen. This is a gun issue. Yeah. It is a gun issue, folks. Yes, it's a people-oriented issue. I know. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Well, people kill people much more easily with guns.
Right.
And if you restrict guns, and I'm not saying taking them all away. I'm not saying, like, ban guns. I'm not saying that. Like, what I am saying is that there's no reason for some of these really high-powered weapons to be in the hands of the general populace. It's just not necessary. And it's just really disheartening to see that people don't see the correlation between this. Like,
I just think some people don't choose to. They're choosing not to.
Yeah, they're clearly choosing not to. They're making a conscious decision to overlook what seems really fucking obvious.
And it's fucked up. It's fucked up because these are people's lives. These are children's lives who have not been able to live yet.
Yeah, 14 children. You know, the stories about these young people coming out, many of them have already been, you know, many of them were seniors, already accepted to colleges, which they will never get to attend. Some of them were very, very young, 14, 15 years old. I mean, these are young people whose lives were taken far too soon. And what is going to be done about it? You know, what is going to be done? And right now, unfortunately, the fact that we were able to go through almost 2 hours of this broadcast before it sort of occurred to me when I read a headline that George and Amal Clooney donated $500,000 to the students' planned march on Washington.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that this happened just a week ago and it almost slipped my mind speaks volumes because of the fact that it's become so commonplace
to just ignore
that it happens. Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, that's horrible. Oh, well,
yeah.
Another one bites the dust.
Right.
You know, and that is not the way this needs to happen. You know, 49 people in a gay nightclub killed, 70 people or whatever at a concert in Las Vegas killed, 17 students killed. We're reaching a point that they are saying statistically we are up to almost one school shooting a week.
Holy shit.
Like, statistically speaking, we're rapidly approaching the numbers that would give us one school-related or involved shooting a week. That is that the country that we want to live in?
Girl, it's time to go. I would get the hell out of here if that was the case.
That's insane. What it is coming down to, people, is that ideally we should depend on our legislators, our elected officials, to protect us. And it does not appear that some of them are. So what I'm encouraging is my final comments from this episode. Remember, the voices that we have will be heard come election time. When you go out to vote in November, or the next time you look at something that's coming up on your polls, or you look at somebody who is asking for your support for a political position, find out what their position is on really important topics like gun control.
Right.
Are they accepting financial donations from the NRA? Because if they accept financial donations from the NRA, that means the NRA is going to expect something in return from them. That means that they have then invested in allowing situations like this to happen, whether you believe in, you know, like I said, I'm not saying that no guns should be allowed, but I definitely think that legislation should be passed saying that guns that can kill so many people with such little effort are just not necessary in our society.
No.
It's not. I mean, we look down upon countries like, you know, what's going on, for example, between Israel and Palestine. They're people who are terrified and terrorized in their living environment because there's constant war and battle. We look down on wars in the Middle East.
Right.
We look down on situations of terrorism. Honey, I'm sorry, but the last time I checked, somebody's killing 17 random innocent children
is terrorism.
A man, an old white man, pulling a trigger and killing 60-some people at a Las Vegas concert is terrorism.
Yep.
Just because he is not black or brown does not excuse it or change what it is.
Right.
It is domestic terrorism, and we are allowing this. And how are we allowing it? Because we are allowing guns. Bitch, somebody tried to sneak a bomb on an airplane one time in their motherfucking shoe 10 years ago, and bitches have to take off their shoes every time you go into the airport now.
Right.
One motherfucker tried this to bomb some plane by sneaking some shit on in their shoe. And now everybody has to take off their shoes to go in the airport.
Like, them trying to use liquid as bombs, and now we can't have...
Yes.
You know?
Now you can't carry a hairspray bottle with you on... You can't carry your perfume with you on the...
You can't carry your makeup on the airplane. I mean,
but yet, bitch, you can go kill somebody with an Uzi...
And still buy one
every time you turn around, and then go buy. And everybody's just at Walmart the next day getting their Uzi,
right?
Like, you know, ordering that shit online, and people are, well, but just to open a black market, girl, I'd rather have to have somebody jump through the hoops of going to the black market,
right,
to get some shit than just walking to the fucking corner store and picking up their machine gun. You know, and that might be an oversimplification of how easy it is to get a machine gun,
but y'all get it.
But the fact of the matter is that the ability to come by a firearm that can kill almost as many people as quickly as a bomb in your damn shoe on an airplane, like, it's easier to do that, and there is less legislation and prevention to keep that from happening. Mm-hmm. So it's just really disheartening. It's devastating, and I'm sure, you know, going on this rant to our listeners is like preaching to the choir. I'm fairly certain that the vast majority of you out there are on the same page that we are. But what I would say is a reminder to each of us, our voices are important. And impacting the people around us and persuading them to make sure that their voices are heard at the next elections or whenever possible when it comes to things like this is very, very necessary. The fact that we are requiring teenagers to be the ones to speak up,
right,
that is absurd. These kids aren't old enough to vote. They're not old enough to drink, but they are clearly old enough to die in their fucking second period class.
Right.
You know, and now they're having to march on Washington because they are legitimately terrified of going to school. You know, one of the last thing I'll say about this, if you do not think that shootings in school have become ridiculously prevalent, take into consideration that one of the teachers who was shot and killed while saving students in this school in Florida had actually talked to his fiance previous to this incident and said, if I am ever killed in a school shooting, this is what you should say. Why is it that any high school teacher
has to have that conversation?
Would have that conversation. And the only reason that is like feasible to imagine is because it has become so commonplace that that is actually something that people think about going into the workplace. It's not about how they're going to educate our students. It's not how they're going to change the future by bringing our children an education that will allow them to further their lives. It's about thinking, this is what you should say, honey, if I'm killed in a school shooting.
Right.
That is fucking depressing. It is depressing, bitch. All right.
Well,
Pearl's like, well. All right, my rant here is done, bitch.
Yeah.
It's done, girl.
So, if you guys are in the Bay Area, come out this weekend to Coronation.
Yes, if you're in the Bay Area and you have an extra 8 to 14 hours you want to spend, girl, it's a long event. As much as I would like all of you guys to be there to support the people who are stepping down and the possibility that I'll be crowned, asking you to spend, it's also $70. Asking you to spend $70.
Tripping.
Well, fortunately, it's only 50 cents an hour if you, like, what? If you figure out.
Yeah.
Going to be there for like 5 days. But anyway, no, it's a long event. As much as I would love to encourage people to attend it, I understand that it's only for a particular type of person who might really enjoy something like that or whatever. But I will bring you all the highlights of it next episode. That is for certain. And Pearl, where will you be this weekend?
I will be at the Lookout for Drag Brunch on Saturday morning. I'll be at Asia SF for dinner all night Saturday night. And then Sunday, I will be at the cafe performing with Sonique and hopefully a group of other trans women.
All right, you guys. Remember, please follow us on social media. You can find us at Party Foul Radio.
On Twitter and on
Facebook.
There you go.
That brings this episode to more than a close. I am Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
You're listening to Party Foul Radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Bye. It's over. It's over. It's over. She's the one. Girl, you better.